This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. The House of Representatives Judiciary Committee has voted to hold Attorney General William Barr in contempt of Congress for not releasing an unredacted version of Special Prosecutor Robert Mueller's report on Russian meddling in the 2016 presidential election. AP's Ed Donahue has details.
The vote is part of the legal battle over access to the Robert Mueller Russia report.
There are 24 ayes and 16 noes.
Ahead of the vote, President Trump asserted executive privilege over the report and reserved the right to block access. Committee Chair Jerry Nadler says this is an attempt by the executive branch to take power away from Congress and the American people.
We've talked for a long time about approaching a constitutional crisis. We are now in it.
The ranking Republican on the committee, Doug Collins, says there is no constitutional crisis.
This is simply another interest to defame the attorney general, to lower him in the eyes of the public.
Republicans on the committee say Democrats are not happy with the findings of the Mueller report. Ed Donahue, Washington.
The Senate Intelligence Committee has subpoenaed Donald Trump Jr., calling him to answer questions about his 2017 testimony. The committee has renewed interest in talking to President Trump's eldest son after Trump's former lawyer, Michael Cohen, told a House committee in February that he had briefed Trump Jr. approximately 10 times about a plan to build a Trump Tower in Moscow. Trump Jr. told the Senate Judiciary Committee in 2017 he was only peripherally aware of the proposal. The Intelligence Committee has been investigating Russia and election interference and Trump's ties to Russia for the last 2 years. President Trump imposed new sanctions on Iran Wednesday, hours after the Iranian president said he was pulling out of parts of the six-nation nuclear deal. Trump said in an executive order Wednesday that there would be new sanctions on Iranian metal exports, steel, aluminum, copper, and iron, major sources of revenue for Iran. President's action came after Iranian President Hassan Rouhani said Wednesday his country was to suspend compliance with prohibitions on stockpiles of enriched uranium. This is VOA News. The lawyer for Chinese tech giant Huawei CFO Meng Wanzhou says that he will ask a Canadian court to stop the case against her because of comments from U.S. President Donald Trump. Meng is under house arrest in Canada, awaiting possible extradition to the United States, where she is wanted on charges of fraud. A lawyer, Scott Fenton, said in a Vancouver court Wednesday that comments by Trump that he would intervene in Meng's case if it would help in U.S.-China trade negotiations show the case against her may be politically motivated. Benjamin Hose is the vice president of media affairs with Huawei Canada.
From the beginning, Huawei has expressed extreme confidence in Ms. Meng's innocence. We have maintained that her U.S.-ordered arrest was an unlawful abuse of process, one guided by political considerations and tactics, not by the rule of law.
Canadian police arrested Meng on a U.S. warrant in December on charges of violating U.S. sanctions against Iran and defrauding banks by hiding her activities through a Huawei subsidiary. China arrested two Canadians in December for alleged spying in apparent retaliation for Meng's arrest. Another Canadian citizen sentenced to 15 years in prison on drug charges in China now faced the death penalty. Chinese Vice Premier Liu He arrives in Washington this week for trade talks as the United States prepares to raise tariffs on Chinese goods in the middle of his visit. A notice published Wednesday from the U.S. Trade Representative's office said that the U.S. will boost tariffs from 10% to 25% on $200 billion of Chinese imports on Friday. Late Wednesday at a rally in Florida, Mr. Trump said that China had broken the deal and would face stiff tariffs. President said they broke the deal and they can't do that, so they'll be paying.
President Xi is a friend of mine, great guy, but he's for China. I'm for the USA. I'm for the USA. So we're going to see. They come in tomorrow and whatever happens, don't worry about it. It'll all work out. You know why? It always does. Don't worry about it.
The Chinese Commerce Ministry reacted to the announced tariff increase, vowing to take necessary countermeasures if the tax is in fact implemented. Google said on Thursday an anti-fake news law passed by Singapore's parliament could stunt innovation, a quality that the city-state wants to nurture under plans to expand its tech industry. Singapore's parliament Wednesday passed the Prevention from Online Falsehoods and Manipulation Bill, a law criticized by rights groups, journalists, and tech firms over fears it could be used to clamp down on freedom of speech. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 9th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Nigerian court will hear a petition challenging the re-election of President Buhari.
We believe that we won the February 23, 2019 election, and we believe that our mandate has been stolen and given to the incumbent president, and we are in the tribunal to retrieve the mandate.
Kola Olubodinya is the spokesman for the opposition People's Democratic Party. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's South Africa election. Liberia's president issues executive order barring officials from commenting on national policy issues without authorization. IGAD urges South Sudan parties to implement a peace agreement without delay. And Cameroon's Ambazonia separatists deny claims that some of their fighters have been surrendering to government forces.
What you hear or read out there coming from French Cameroon sources is propaganda meant to coerce our restoration forces to lay down their arms to their so-called disarmament commission.
Chris Anu is the spokesman for Cameroon's Ambazonia separatists and using technology to promote local languages in Africa. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Nigerian appellate court will hear a petition brought by the opposition People's Democratic Party, the PDP, and its candidate, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, challenging the re-election of President Muhammadu Buhari. The court has set May 15 as the date to begin hearing the petition. President Buhari won the February 2019 vote by more than 4 million votes, but the PDP says it has technical experts to corroborate its claims that the results were tampered with. Kola Olubodinya is the National Publicity Secretary of the People's Democratic Party of Nigeria.
We believe that we won the February 23, 2019 election, and we believe that our mandate has been stolen and given to the incumbent president, and we are in the tribunal to retrieve the mandate on the basis that in some states they were overvoting. And there are other issues that we have raised before the tribunal, which I cannot precisely go into because it will become subjective.
I was wondering, does the PDP have any additional evidence that it's going to present in court? Because it says here that you have technical experts that corroborate your position. So do you have any results different from what INEC announced?
Like I said earlier on, we do not want to take our matter out of the tribunal and begin to externalize what the issues are. We have laid our matter before the tribunal, and the tribunal precisely wants to say that it will not allow for a review of what its decision will be until the case has been heard. So we believe that as the matter goes on before the tribunal, our evidences will be presented. But I know, as a spokesperson of the PDP, that we have overwhelming evidence against the All Progressives Congress and President Muhammadu Buhari before the tribunal.
So this claim that has been made by the president's party, saying that the former vice president is not a Nigerian, that he is a Cameroonian by heritage, does that disqualify him for petitioning before the tribunal?
It's an absolute misplaced statement, because if the party of Mr. President did say that our candidate is not a Nigerian, it then presupposes that those who voted for him in Adamawa are also not Nigerians. And we believe that that statement comes from a strength of disunity. And it also comes from a strength of a party that does not understand Nigeria, our nation. And we're going to go into that with them. The issues are before the tribunal. And rather than basing their arguments on externalization and taking the issues of fantastic stories out of what the tribunal is asking for, we will not join in that drive. We are before the tribunal and will present our evidences before the tribunal. But like I said earlier on, we have overwhelming evidence against the All Progressives Congress, Mr. President's party, and Mr. President himself.
So before I let you go, Kola, the APC is claiming, or the president's campaign is claiming, that the PDP had illegal access to INEC technology.
Well, it is strange that APC, the president's party, is not contending with the figures that the PDP has presented before the tribunal. Rather, it is claiming that the source of the evidence is not genuine. But it's not disputing the evidence. But like I said, we leave that for the tribunal.
Kola, thank you very much. We are happy to speak with you. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. I'm going to leave that to your service.
Kola Olungbodiya is the National Publicity Secretary of the Opposition People's Democratic Party of Nigeria. You're speaking with me from the capital, Abuja. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's South Africa general election. The vote is the toughest for the ruling African National Congress, ANC, 25 years since coming to power at the end of apartheid. While many voters said they were conflicted about their choices, many others said they cherished the chance to participate in Africa's most mature democracy. Viewers Anita Powell reports from Johannesburg.
Citizens across the Rainbow Nation on Wednesday thronged schools, community centers, church halls, and tents to cast their votes in the nation's sixth parliamentary poll since the beginning of democracy. Leaders of the top three parties, the ruling African National Congress, the opposition Democratic Alliance, and the upstart Economic Freedom Fighters, cast their votes Wednesday morning, with ANC leader and president Cyril Ramaphosa saying the main issues he hoped to tackle if reelected were the nation's flagging economy and high unemployment. Talking to the press after casting his vote in Soweto, he compared this year's poll to the nation's first democratic election, in which the nation elected Nelson Mandela as its first black president.
This is a vote that reminds us of 1994. Because in 1994, our people were just as excited as this, because they were heralding a new period, a new future for our country. And today, this is what I am also picking up.
For the sixth consecutive time, the ruling ANC is expected to win and retain power. But corruption scandals and its sluggish economy have tainted the ANC's image and led some voters to defect to opposition parties. In South Africa's economic hub, some younger voters, like 25-year-old engineering student Londiwe Mkadi, said they struggled to choose.
It felt exciting and a bit challenging because of the different parties that are there, but I was very much excited to exercise my rights today.
Many older voters, like longtime ANC supporter Bobby Madhav, said the choice was simple.
Pretty easy. There's only one party that we've grew up with in the struggle, and we hope that they do the right thing going forward.
South African journalist Musi Mokotlane, who voted early Wednesday in Johannesburg, said the next government has a big job on its hands.
The main problem South Africa has to deal with first is fighting the demon we call corruption within our government structures. If we can deal with that and we're able to make sure that the money that the fiscus has is distributed equitably within society to improve their lives and to make sure that those who are responsible for corruption are punished and are punished severely, then there is a direction that South Africa can take for the improvement of everyone else's life.
Final results are expected by May 11th. The winning party will elect the next president, who will be sworn in on May 25th. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, May 9th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 14 minutes past the hour. Cameroon's Ambazonian separatists are denying claims that some of their fighters have been surrendering to government forces. Cameroon authorities said 165 Anglophone separatists and Boko Haram terrorists have voluntarily surrendered in the past 2 weeks, while hundreds more have stopped fighting. Cameroon's military and groups loyal to the government have been circulating a video for the past week of an alleged former separatist fighter named Yannick Kawa. Chris Anium is a spokesman of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Separative Movement of Cameroon. He says the allegations of AMBA fighters defecting are all Cameroon government propaganda.
There is no known Ambazonian Restoration Force that has surrendered to the French Republic of Cameroon. Absolutely not. What you hear or read out there coming from French Cameroon sources is propaganda meant to coerce our restoration forces to lay down their arms to their so-called disarmament commission.
So what do you think this video and this Yannick Kawa, who is believed to be one of your separatist fighters, where do you think it comes from now?
By the way, we are not separatists. We are restorationists. We are nationalists and patriots who are looking for our own country As for Yannick, Yannick is a Cameroon soldier who goes around masquerading as if he has been an Ambazonian restoration fighter, trying to persuade other fighters to lay down their arms. He is not succeeding. That is what the French Cameroon dictatorship is trying to do. Let me add one more thing. Let me send a message to French Cameroon. Ambazonian restoration forces will not lay down their arms until French Cameroon troops are out of our territory and until our leaders are released from their dungeons in Yaoundé. That is the only circumstance under which we will lay down our troops. And let me also add, we are fighting the fight of our life for our own country. And nothing will persuade us to ask our boys to lay down or surrender their arms.
There was a tweet on Tuesday on social media attributed to the president. The quote is that the president Biya's forgive and forget tweet, which was interpreted by some as the president extending an olive branch to his opponents like you to forgive and forget.
Paul Biya and those who serve in his government are all hypocrites. If they are serious about forgetting and forgiving, why shouldn't he start by releasing our leaders who are in his captivity? Why can't he start by releasing everybody, including Kamto Morris, who are in his captivity? So if Mr. Biya is serious about forgiving and forgetting, he should start by pulling again away the troops from our country. I mean, think about it. The international community has been asking for inclusive and unconditional dialogue, negotiations. That is where Mr. Biya should start. That is where forgiveness starts. And so I do not take anything that you see out there coming from that regime seriously. Again, they are hypocrites. When we are crying, we want our freedoms, we want our country, all they tell us they want to do is, oh, stop people from using the word, the appellation, francophone and anglophone. Is this how you solve a conflict of this magnitude? By asking people not to use certain titles? So they are not serious. Release the prisoners. Withdraw the soldiers from our streets. Then we will, for once, take him seriously.
Chris, thank you very much again. Always nice to have you on Daybreak Africa.
My pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed Ambazonian Separatist Movement of Cameroon. He was speaking with me from the U.S. city of Houston in Texas. Liberian President George Weah has issued an executive order barring government ministers and their deputies from commenting on national policy issues on both conventional and social media without authorization from appropriate authorities. This comes after Mr. Weah on Tuesday suspended Deputy Information Minister Eugene Fang for stoking ethnic divisions during a comment on his private Facebook page about the coming June 7th anti-government protest. Rodney Sear is the publisher and editor-in-chief of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper.
Well, James, as you know, since the government came to office in January 2018, there have been a lot of messengers disseminating the government's message. And I think there were a lot of criticism about that. And so I think the government now realizes that these multiple messages were being filtered the wrong way to the public, especially in the wake of the recent suspension of Deputy Minister of Information, Eugene Fango, who was suspended because he used insensitive languages on social media regarding the controversial Congo versus country. And now the president on Wednesday issued an executive order. It means that the Ministry of Information, Culture, Affairs, and Tourism, which was created by the Act of Legislature in 1965, now resumes full control of all of the government's disseminating message. According to the executive order, there will be grave consequences of any member of the executive branch who is sworn in violation of the directives.
As you mentioned, this is coming out of the suspension of the Deputy Information Minister, Eugene Fangon. But let me ask you, in these days of social media, where the dissemination of information is going this fast, do you think this is workable for the government?
Well, it's difficult. I think the problem has been that, if you may recall, the minister on your program this week mentioned the fact that Mr. Francois used those insensitive remarks on his personal Facebook page. Now, their idea is that government officials who have personal Facebook pages or Twitter accounts can no longer defend the government or no longer go on Facebook and defend anything about the government policy because they feel that it's not being filtered properly for the public. There are too many messengers giving the same message.
It seems to me that this week is coming to an end where the government was really having, I would say, difficulty trying to figure out how to deal with the multiple issues that it has to deal with. You have the protest that is being planned. Now you have the suspension of the deputy minister. Do you think that with this now, they will be able to control their messages?
Well, that's what the government is hoping. As you know, the upcoming June 7 protest in Monrovia is building a lot of momentum. And it's because of that protest, in fact, that Mr. Fangon went on social media to accuse the Americo-Liberians of being the mastermind of the protest, which landed him in trouble. So now that this executive order has come into place, it will be interesting to see how the government now begin to fine-tune the message in a way that doesn't suggest or make it seem like they're trying to fine-tune the message to avoid the protesters going after them. So I think the message is clear. Information goes by fast, and it's up to you now as a journalist or as a government spokesperson to make sure your message gets out the right way. So I think the government has been behind. They've been lagging behind in terms of defending itself on social media, but I'm not sure how much of an impact this executive order will have on that front.
Rodney, thank you very much again. Always nice to talk with you. Thank you.
Thank you, James.
Rodney Sears, publisher and editor-in-chief of Liberia's Front Page African newspaper, who was speaking with me from the capital of Monrovia. Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, also known as IGAD, is urging parties to the South Sudan's revitalized peace agreement to implement the remaining tasks without delay so that the new government can be formed by November. The IGAD Council of Ministers concluded a two-day meeting in Juba this week. Winnie Sirino reports from Juba.
IGAD Special Envoy to South Sudan, Ismail Wais, says the six-month extension of the pre-transitional period will enable the parties to complete critical transitional security arrangements and give the Independent Boundaries Commission extra time to work out the number and boundaries of states. Speaking at the start of Council of Ministers meeting yesterday, Wais called on IGAD member countries to authorize him to meet with groups that did not sign the peace deal.
Curtail on the non-signatory armed groups to join the implementation of the RRCS. Authorize my office to hold one more round of engagement with General Thomas Cyril Osawak on a determined timeline.
Wais says the SPLM-IO registered concerns about the constitutional amendment process as proposed by the National Constitutional Amendment Committee and the Joint Monitoring Evaluation Commission and urged the Council of Ministers to look into those concerns.
Make a final decision on the status of the SPLM-IO Commander-in-Chief and Chairperson Dr. Riek Machar Teny. Consider and decide on the reservations registered by the SPLM-IO on the description of the system of governance under the RRCS in the pre-transitional and the transitional period and on the procedures for the amendment of the transitional constitution and other relevant laws during the pre-transitional period.
Augustino Njoroge, the interim head of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, which monitors implementation of the deal, says out of 59 tasks that were supposed to be implemented during the pre-transitional period, less than half were completed. Njoroge says the parties must directly address the challenges facing the implementation of the pre-transitional activities.
Our focus should now fall squarely on the leadership of the parties to demonstrate clear political will and commitment to make sure that the security-related institutions and mechanisms of the agreement deliver.
The parties are to assemble, canton, train, and unify the forces within the next 6 months. They're also supposed to reconstitute the disarmament, demobilization, and reintegration commission and agree on the number of states and boundaries. For VOA News, I am Winnie Sirino in Juba.
A group of language activists are using technology to promote local languages in Africa. The movement, known as Digit African Lang, is mostly on Twitter. after launching in March. One of the project coordinators, Eddie Avihar, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the languages they have highlighted so far and the goals.
We've been meeting a lot of interesting people, people who are really passionate about their language and culture, and just kind of providing the space for them to, you know, share the ideas, their work, the challenges, but also kind of some of their hopeful plans for the future. And so it's been kind of a, just basically facilitating the space and amplifying their voices and letting them kind of represent themselves and talk about themselves directly to people who are interested.
What languages have you focused on so far?
So far we've had Yoruba, Igbo, Ga, Twi, and I think those are the main ones we've had so far. But right now we're still kind of doing outreach to fill in the rest of the slots. We hope to go through the end of December, as 2019 is the International Year of Indigenous Languages. And so we're kind of doing these projects within the framework of that year-long campaign. And so our plan is to do so until the end of December. And so right now we're kind of reaching out to different people, asking for recommendations. People are kind of stepping forward, asking if they could be a part of it. And so we're still in that phase of outreach. But I mean, so far we've had really great hosts who have, you know, brought something different each week. And I think we've seen you know, collaboration take place. I think people have been able to share their work, that people from the outside have been able to learn a lot and kind of see what other people are doing across the continent.
And besides, so it's mostly, at this point, it's a conversation on social media, on Twitter, sharing information. Is that correct? I mean, and if that's the case, how do you propose, how would you like to see it grow or live on after the project?
I think it remains to be seen. I think we've seen people connect with one another. I think, you know, for all the kind of negative, you know, publicity and all, you know, all the negative stuff that happened on Twitter that we all know about, I think this is maybe a kind of island of positivity where people are able to kind of show what's happening within these communities that are fueled by a person or a collective or a project that are really using technology to show how African languages can be, you know, active online, can be present online, and, you know, attract young people to keep their language. And so I think, you know, I think we're still kind of experimenting with the platform. Maybe, you know, some networks might be able to form from there. Maybe some collaborative projects might be able to form. But I think we're not really sure where this is going, which is, I think it's a okay thing to do. But I think right now we're seeing some positive interaction and people who are learning a lot through the platform.
That was Eddie Avia, director of Rising Voices and coordinator of DJ African Lang. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Bolivia. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Vote counting is underway in Wednesday's South Africa general election. The vote is the toughest for the ruling African National Congress, ANC, 25 years since coming to power at the end of apartheid. A Nigerian appellate court will hear a petition brought by the opposition People's Democratic Party, PDP, and its candidate, former Vice President Atiku Abubakar, challenging the re-election of President Muhammadu Buhari. The court has set May 15 as the date to begin hearing the petition. Libyan Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj says his rival for power, General Khalifa Haftar, is trying to stage a coup to take Libya by force. That is it for this Thursday, May 9th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as post editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineers, I'm James Butte in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
Sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com. We'll be right back.